Hey everyone, this is Josh, host of Urban Valor. Welcome to another episode of the Urban Valor podcast. Today's guest is Marine veteran Robert Wood. Robert was born in Bellflower, California and grew up in Buena Park. After Robert's mom seen his car on the news riddled with bullet holes, she gave him three choices. Either he goes to live in Mexico, go to college out of state, or join the military. Robert decided to enlist into the Marine Corps and became a radio operator assigned to 1st Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion. During Robert's enlistment, he became good friends with a fellow Marine, Jamie Nicholson. Robert talks about the unexpected loss of Jamie, who was battling with mental health upon retiring from the Marine Corps. He also speaks on his job as a firefighter stationed at Camp Pendleton upon transitioning out and having to respond to active duty suicides. If you enjoyed this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor or know anyone else who may, reach out on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you can email me at josh@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
So my name is Robert Wood. I'm 44, branch of service with the United States Marine Corps. I got out as a sergeant, E5.
What job did you do?
I was a 2531 at the time. I think a lot of the MOSs have changed since then, but I was a radio operator. I was born in Bellflower, California. Grew up, spent most of my time growing up in Buena Park, Orange County. Had a blessed childhood. Going back, I think around 2 years old, my biological dad split. Mom remarried, I think, when I was about 5 or 6. Guy was awesome, you know, taught me how to treat a woman, taught me how to take care of the family and all that. He ended up adopting me and I took his last name. He's from England, you know, so had a very blessed childhood. Every other year we'd go to England and visit the relatives out there, you know.
Oh, really?
Had a little sister. Blessed childhood, traveled all over the world.
What was it like going to England?
It's awesome, man. You know, England's a whole nother, it's almost like a whole nother time period. You know, back then in the 80s and 90s when I was going to visit the relatives, it's cobblestone streets, you know, and everything revolved around soccer, you know, so soccer was huge in my family. I had a real good childhood. Went to private school from 1st to 8th grade. I was an altar boy. Real close, tight-knit family. I was lucky, man.
Yeah. Did you ever get into any kind of trouble growing up or anything?
Not until my high school years, you know. I think right around my junior, senior year, so that was about 94, 95, started hanging around some gangsters. Saw where it was heading, you know, drugs, locked up, shot, and just knew that it kind of wasn't for me, you know. One of my closest homeboys, my grandfather had passed away and he'd given me his 86 Buick Regal, and that thing's a G-Ride, you know. And so me and my homie go to a party in Cyprus, and he basically called some people over, you know, and so he's like, hey man, come outside, wait with me. You know, I've got some brothers showing up, you know, and it was a packed house. I had just found a seat, so I opted to stay inside, you know, and he went outside, and shortly thereafter, pop, 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 you know, and so everybody hits the deck. I run to the window and see my homie laying there, you know, he was shot up pretty bad. And back then there was OCN, Orange County News. My mom used to watch that. And so he had gotten shot. My car, my baby, my Regal got a few bullet holes in it. And the next day, my mom's watching OCN and she sees my car on the news, you know, and she hears that somebody got shot. And so that was pretty much the defining moment where my mom gave me an ultimatum. Basically, you're either going to go live with relatives down in Mexico to get away, you're going to go to college, preferably out of state, or you're going to join the military. And I didn't have too many family members that were in the military, but my grandfather, who I was extremely close with, he was in the Army Air Corps. I knew the military was special, you know, and my dad was a DJ, you know, self-employed DJ. So he DJ parties, weddings and whatnot. He ended up DJing a few Marine Corps balls, and he would bring me the centerpieces to the Marine Corps ball, you know, which was an eagle holding the American flag and the Marine Corps flag. And so I didn't know much about the Marine Corps other than it was the toughest branch. They looked the baddest, you know, on their dress blues and all that. And so I think part of my rebellious side was I knew my mom didn't kind of want me going the military route, you know, but I knew that it was something special, you know. And so I said, okay, well, let's give the Marines a try. I didn't bother entertaining the Navy or the Army. Wanted nothing to do with them. I thought they looked kind of funky in their uniforms and whatnot, you know. And so I go down and talk to a recruiter. Now, my mom was very protective, you know, and so smart woman. We go down. I took the ASVAB, scored high enough on the ASVAB to where I could have gotten a West Coast guarantee and a guaranteed MOS. And skip a month, I think, you know, getting ready to process, you know, and go down. And my mom's looking over my contract, and my recruiter had just basically had an open contract. And she was like, no, hold on, you know, where is his West Coast guarantee? Where is his MOS, you know? And so I think my recruiter hated my mother, you know, but good on my mom, because she was, you know, she did me right, you know. Mom always said, you know, don't go in as a grunt, you know, get some sort of training from the military that you can fall back on when you get out, you know. And so I listened to mom. And I ended up with 2531 radio operator, and I got my West Coast guarantee. And from there, I went to MCRD San Diego in 96.
Wow. Talk to me about that, man. What was it like going into boot camp for you?
Gee, it was a freaking shock, man. You know, I had never seen Full Metal Jacket, so the whole DI screaming at you, just tearing you down, was all new to me. I was Golf Company 2057. It was intense. You know, I think back then, the DIs, I got punched by my DI twice on two different occasions, you know, and I'm 18, probably weighing a buck 25, and I got a freaking grown man just laid into me two separate times, you know, and freaking knocked me and the two dudes behind me out, you know.
What happened?
I fell out late, you know, for formation, and the DI, you know, you never really saw their eyeballs, you know, all you saw was just from their nose down, and I just remember it's dark. And something to the effects of recruit Wood, you know, why are you late? Something like that, you know. And I tried to give an answer before I could even speak, you know. He, bam, straight took me. And like I said, the two recruits behind us out, just laid us all out. And then the other time was up at the rifle range at Pendleton. And I just kept shooting into the dirt, you know. And he had a ring on. And he knelt down next to me and was like, what the fuck are you doing, Wood? This recruit doesn't know. And he just... bam, gave me a freaking quick one right to the side of the head, you know, kind of snapped me out of it. And I was terrified, you know. I'd shot guns before, but never for points and on target, you know. And so I was a wreck. Ended up high shooter, you know. I mean, and at the end, you know, I mean, I think that one shot freaking snapped me too, you know, and pull it together. But boot camp, looking back on it, man, boot camp was fun. I needed it. And I think you kind of learn to just fly under the radar, right? You know, you don't want to stand out. You don't want to be the first or the last one. You know, you just want to be right there, even keel in the middle. And yeah, it was fun, man, looking back on it. And the games that the drill instructors would play, man, it was crazy. One of the games that I vividly remember is we were up at Pendleton, and we had the green blankets on our racks, right? And somehow somebody fucked up or something. So DI is everybody online. So everybody falls out online, you know, right there in front of your racks. Get your sunscreen. And we're all like, what the fuck? So go to our foot lockers and grab the sunscreen. All right, put it in your hands, stick your other hand out and dump it. So some guys are just putting little globs, and the drill instructors just walk up and squeeze the whole freaking tube. And so we're standing like, what the fuck? You know, we've got suntan lotion freaking dripping through our hands, you know, put on your face. Some guys are doing this number, and the DIs come up, you know, and they're just throwing our hands in our faces. So now we're just covered in white freaking sunscreen. Grab your green blankets. Why? None of us could understand what the hell we were doing. So we grab the green blankets and start shaking them. So we start shaking them, and those green blankets are notorious for just taking all the dust, you know. So now we're just dusting the freaking barracks out, you know, and everybody's, it was a mess, man. You know, there was guys that broke out in gnarly rashes just from having that much sunscreen on, you know, and they didn't let us wipe it off. They took us right out to the pit and fucking thrashed us some more, you know, all of us with freaking sunscreen on. It was, they come up with some pretty good games.
Dude, that shit burns too.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty, man. It wasn't pretty, but it, you know, all in all, it was a great experience, you know.
Were you guys doing the Crucible still back then?
I think we were the second platoon to go through the Crucible. So it was a new thing, you know, hiking the Reaper. I mean, in my mind right now, the Reaper is like straight up, but I see the Reaper today, you know, like at Pendleton, and it, you know, it wasn't that bad, but at 18, you know, with your full existence load on your back and you're walking up, you know, I think we walked a total of something like 70 miles or something in a span of 3 days to give you two MREs, sleep deprived, food deprived, all that, you know, just to see how you guys can cohese, you know, and get it together, you know. But it was the first time I ever fell asleep sleepwalking. I mean, we were humping, and I remember vividly, it's nighttime, you know, and just your information hiking, and I closed my eye, I could see a yellow light out by some porta shitters, you know, kind of close my eyes, you know, and I, when I open them, I don't see the light anymore, and I turn around, and I must have slept, walked a good little distance, you know, and I mean, we were just broke off, man, done.
Wow.
You know, but it was intense, man, and it was all for a purpose, man, you know, and when you get to the top, and you've been called to recruit and spit on and everything, you know, and they finally call you a Marine, they give you that Eagle Globe and anchor, I cried like a little girl, man. We all did.
Yeah.
It was freaking intense, man.
Wow. So where'd you go after boot camp?
After boot camp, got my MOS 2531, so it was out to 29 Palms. I think I was out there for about a month and a half. It was a school. Hated 29 Palms. Still do to this day. From 29, I got orders to 1st Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion, or H&S Company, over in Las Flores at Camp Pendleton. Mm. So I check in there to H&S as, I think, a PFC. And when I had signed up, you know, I signed up to go overseas, and I wanted to do all the badass shit, you know, and I get to H&S, and my day-to-day operations at H&S was, you're in that comm cage, you're PMing radios, and you're doing this, and you're doing that. Started asking around if we deploy, and guys were like, no, this is H&S, we're just a support element, you know, and so didn't like that idea, wanted to deploy, you know, went to the first sergeant, a first sergeant, you know, request to go to a line company, you know, I want to be able to deploy, and it was okay, good to go, Bravo company's leaving in a week, pack your shit, you know. And so there I am, 18 years old, hit the fleet. So I was kind of scared, you know, like, so I go talk to the first sergeant for Bravo company, who was a legend in his era from the 80s and 90s, first sergeant James Lewis, you know. And I go to talk to the first sergeant, and he's like, roger that, you want to come over as a radio operator, we're leaving tomorrow. And I think they were just fucking with me to see where I was at, you know, they were actually deploying in a month, you know. But I ended up coming over with Bravo, and I even requested, I said, you know, I hear you guys keep a rear element, you know, I'm new to the fleet, is there any way I get my feet wet in the fleet and not deploy with you guys? Because these guys were already cohesed, these guys were already a tight-knit group of Marines, you know, and they're eyeballing me like, who the hell is this guy, you know. So I was intimidated by all those guys who'd already been serving with each other for 2-3 years, you know. And so first sergeant out of respect, let me stay in the rear. Stayed in the rear, they deployed, and then my time was just doing little workups here and there until the forward element came back. Once the forward element came back, that's where I got to meet everybody, you know, and then that's where all the hazing and the fun began.
Oh, man.
So it was just, I thought, all right, man, this Bravo rear element was pretty cool, you know, and everybody seems to be really nice, you know, and then you got these salty Marines coming back, you know, and they're sawed off, and they're just, you know, yeah, there's a lot of hazing, a lot of good times, bad times. I wouldn't even call them bad though. You know, it was all for a purpose, man. All the hazing is just, it's either a rite of passage or it's to see what you're about. You know.
Yeah. What type of fun did they put you through?
Oh, it was just old school, you know. And you know, I had the best of both worlds. So I was comms, right? But I really wanted to be a scout. So I requested the first sergeant, you know, hey, I really want to be a scout. I like what they're doing. And at that time, we had a change of command where we had an outgoing lieutenant colonel for a battalion, and we had an incoming from force, Colonel Powers, jump wings, bubble, everything, you know. And so he wanted to revamp the scout program. And so at that time, it was demolition package. It was sapper school. It was this, that, and the other thing. It was awesome. And so I'm like, that's what I want to do, you know. So I asked the first sergeant, you know, I'll make it worth your while for sergeant. I'll teach all the scouts how to work the radios. You know, let me be a scout. So he crossed me over to the scouts. So when the scouts were getting fucked with, I would always tell my staff sergeant, hey, I got comp shit I got to do. So I'd weasel my way out of the games that they were getting fucked with, you know, and I was kind of on my own to do my own thing, you know. But the hazing was more just field days, taking everything you owned out of your room on the third deck, bringing it down to the first deck, field day, clean, while all the NCOs down on the first deck are getting shit-faced. So they're all partying, and we're taking each piece, cleaning it, taking it back up into the room, and then inspections, you know, and you never passed an inspection. So they're throwing your shit off the third deck, you know, and they're this and they're that. Promotional hazings, you know, when I got my blood stripe as a corporal, I had all corporals and sergeants just go to town on both sides, you know. They did the pinning, you know, with no backs and the rank insignia, and that was just to me, it was a rite of passage, you know. Okay, I'm one of you guys. I'm a corporal now, I'm an NCO, you know. Give it to me, you know. And wasn't able to walk that whole weekend, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way through till probably midweek the next week, you know. And there were some guys that got it harder than others. I got along real well with my NCOs, and a lot of them were Hispanic, you know, and so a lot of them were from LA. I was from Orange County, you know, and so we shared that common ground. So I think they took it a little bit easier on me than they did some of the other guys, the shitbags. I feel bad for, because fuck, those guys got it bad. Ass whoopings, you know, you'd go down to the last room at the end of the barracks, and that was one of the sergeant's rooms, and go in there and close the blinds, and then you just heard fucking furniture getting knocked around, and that dude was just getting thrashed and beat up, essentially, you know, body shots, no face shots, you know. And all our staff NCOs knew what was going on, but staff NCOs turned around and walked the other way. And I don't think there was one Marine that came out of those hazing incidents worse off. You know, they got hazed for a reason. They learned a lesson. They turned it around. And like these guys, a lot of them today were SEER instructors, and they went on to retire out of the Marine Corps, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to one of them. I'm like, man, brother, you were the biggest shitbird. You got your ass kicked on a daily. And then, you know, you deployed 3 or 4 times, SEER instructor, you know, drill instructor, this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, man, you fucking turned it around, you know.
Yeah.
And it made me proud, you know. And so I see the hazing. Shortly thereafter, my time in the Marine Corps is when they started ixnaying all the hazing. That's when people were just writing their congressmen and this and that, and all that shit came down, you know.
Can you explain to people what the pinning is? You mentioned earlier getting pinned without the backings, just for the ones that might not understand what that
so
means.
So you had your rank insignia on your collar. Essentially, there were 2 prongs, essential nail points, needles type of thing, you know, and you'd have the little pins you put on the back of them, you know. And when you knew you were getting promoted, you got to pick an NCO that you either worked for and respected the pinion, you know, and so that you'd be in the back of formation, you'd walk around, you get your ranks put in, you know, and then they'd finish the ceremony. And then generally for us, they would dismiss us, and those that got promoted went down to that last room, like I told you. And so all the corporals and NCOs, it was a stern handshake, congratulations, corporal, and they would take their hands without the backs in the rank, the rank insignias, and it was boom, like that, you know. And it all depended on how hard they wanted to hit you. But you've got now 2 nail ends getting pinned into you repeatedly. Boom, good job. Shake your hand, boom, good job. Shake your hand, and it went on till everybody was done. Along with that, you have in the dress blues or the blue trousers, you've got your blood stripe. You know, it's the red stripe that goes along your legs, you know, and same thing. It was good job, and wham, you know, with their knees, you know, right into the the sides of your legs. And there, you know, I weighed probably about 140 at that point, you know, and I've got grown men that are in their 200 ranges, you know, just sitting there going to town. And it was a time that, you know, I'm proud that I went through that, because I hear nowadays it's good job, you know, and it's like a soft one. It's more of just the movement, you know. There's no meaning behind it, you know, and we were bleeding through our shirts, and we were bruised up for freaking a month, you know, after having got that. But you're like, hell yeah, mm-hmm. I got my opinion the old school way, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Now you end up going on deployment with your unit, is that right?
Yeah. So we did our workups from 29 back to Pendleton with the LAR. And then we got a Westpac. So we deployed. The first stop from Pendleton is Hawaii. And then from Hawaii, we went to Korea, Singapore, Thailand. I turned 21 in Thailand, which was, it was a little bit of a blur, but, you know, it was a good time to be able to say that you spent your 21st birthday in Thailand. You know, it brings back good memories. You know, I had good brothers, and there was no one else I would rather spend it with, you know. But from Thailand, we went to UAE, Bahrain, Qatar, and then our training got cut short in the Gulf because there was a revolutionary war between Muslims and Catholics going on over in Indonesia. So we flipped a U-turn and we headed out to Indonesia, and we spent a few months out there, more show of force, passed out some rice and helped rebuild some huts and stuff like that, you know. And then headed home, you know. We were heading home in December, so we were real like, man, are we going to make it home in time for Christmas or New Year's? Then we ended up pulling off the coast of Pendleton on December 21st. And so we made it in time for Christmas, you know, to get home to the families and everything. It was a beautiful thing, man. And they brought, the cool thing about the way home is they bring the dads. And I think in one case, they brought a mom as well. They fly, it's a Tiger cruise. So they fly your parents. It was generally fathers. They fly the fathers out to Hawaii. And then the fathers get to have one day with us in Hawaii. And then we hop on the boat and we come back. And so when we come back on the ship, it's a dog and pony for them. You know, we let them shoot the saw and the M16 and this and that. You know, we put on little demos for them. And it was a total bonding experience, man. You know, I had never had a beer with my dad. And there I am, 21, and we're in Hawaii. So, I mean, my dad and I went straight to Hooters and did what we did, man. Got hammered there and come stumbling back to ship, me and my dad, you know. And it was fucking awesome, man. You know, fucking with the Navy guy, you know, request permission to come aboard, you know, and just hammered my dad, you know. It was rad, man. I think pretty much all of us had our dads come out, you know. So it was a special time, you know, to be there and spend it with your father, you know, and let them get a taste of our life, you know, and what we did for the last 9 months, you know, or whatever. And it was pretty cool, man. Nice. They let us do that.
Now, you had a good friend that you wanted to talk about in the Marines.
Yeah. So I had many brothers from the Marine Corps that for LAR that we were all California boys, one of them being Jamie Nicholson. And we affectionately refer to him as Nicky. You know, everybody shortens up your words or gives you nicknames, you know. And so Nicky and I were real close during our time in the Marine Corps. And he was like the responsible one, man, you know. We would be getting shit-faced on a nightly basis, you know. And I can't ever remember him getting shit-faced. He was always there with his drinking. But he was a responsible one, you know. So while the rest of us were throwing shit off the third deck and just partying, music, you know, blaring, you know, he was always the one to kind of look out for us. So when I got out of the Marine Corps, you know, he stayed in. He deployed a number of times. He went to the drill field. He made his way up to gunnery sergeant. And from gunny, you know, him and I talked on a pretty regular basis. All of us California boys pretty much still communicate to this day on a regular basis with Facebook and everything else. You know, it made it that much easier to keep in touch with each other, see each other, pictures, family, this, that, and the other thing. And with Nikki, he wanted to try the officer route. And this is a Marine's Marine, man. This guy genuinely cared for his subordinates, you know, genuinely cared for his Marines, was an eloquent speaker, a great leader, you know, was just a motivating hard charger, you know. So all around good Marine, you know, never got in trouble, never got caught anyways. So good Marine, right? He came in as a private and, like I said, attained the rank of gunnery sergeant. And so he started entertaining the idea of wanting to be an officer, you know, and really lead and mold Marines. So, and I had good discussions with him. You know, he wanted to go in, he wanted to get commissioned as a second lieutenant. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Go be a Mustang, be a warrant officer, you know. And he said, I started at the bottom. On the enlisted side, I want to do the same thing on the officer side, you know. So I respected that, you know. I said, okay, well, they're going to see your stack. And they're going to see that you're a second lieutenant. They're either going to think you got in trouble or they're going to know that there's history behind, that you got history behind you, you know. And so he did. He got commissioned, was a second lieutenant, made his way to first lieutenant, got captain. I think his last West Coast duty station was over at Reconnaissance Battalion over in Las Flores. And during that time, you know, he's, you know, we're talking. Hey, I met a woman, you know, and I'm like, good for you, man. You know, I'm happy, you know, and, hey, I think we're going to get married, you know. I'm like, fucking hey, that's rad, you know. And come to the day where, hey, man, we're getting married in MCRD San Diego, and I want you to be there, you know. And I was stoked for him, you know. Plus, I was stoked to get back to MCRD. I hadn't been since I last stood on those footsteps, you know. So I'll get to take the wife with me. We go to the wedding, picture perfect, beautiful wedding. Got to meet his missus. She's a beautiful woman, you know, and took my wife to the Yellow Footprints, you know, and kind of explained her the history. Showed her my barracks, this, that, and the other thing, you know. And so he goes on. I think they transferred him to the East Coast somewhere at some Air Force base with a small detachment of Marines. And again, like I say, like this social media thing gives us, I think, a false sense of everything's hunky-dory at home. You know, people post good shit. Nobody posts bad shit, right? And he was posting pictures of his wife and their wedding, you know, and then they were expecting around the same time that me and my wife were expecting. And so I was stoked, you know, I'm like, our wives are going to be pregnant together. We're going to have little ones together. You know, you're going to freaking retire and you're going to come bring your ass back to California and we're going to freaking do this, you know. Well, social media is deceiving, man, you know, and I guess I find a lot of this stuff out after the fact, you know, but my brother was going through some tough times, man, you know, and looking back on it at some of the old pictures, as I could see the changes in his face, I could see a little bit of weight gain, I could see things in his eyes that weren't there before, you know, but it never registered with me. You know, so after 25 years of honorable service to the Marine Corps, he's figuring out what he's going to do with his missus and his son. Essentially, he says, you know, honey, take our little one and go back with the family. I'm going to box everything up, field day the house and get it ready to turn over to TMO or whatever it is, you know. And so he sends her on her way. His retirement date is December 31st, 2021. I spoke with them, myself and another staff sergeant, one of our old staff sergeants, spoke with them December 28th, just short, you know, and love you, brother, miss you, you know, hope this fucking year is great, you know, and everything was good. And then January 2, 2022, I get a phone call from a brother of mine that said, did you hear about Nikki? And I said, no. And I had to called around to a couple of other brothers, checked on his Facebook, and motherfucker got his house in line, got everything boxed up and ready to go, didn't want to leave a mess in the house, and essentially walked across the street and took his life across the street, you know, minutes after he retired on December 31st. So he retires December 31st, 2021, and I think shortly thereafter, walked across the street and took his life, and you know, and that fucked us up.
Wow. Did he leave a letter, or did he say, is there any signs like why?
Now, this is, I think, the takeaway. So there was no signs to us on the outside in the fucking Facebook world, you know, in La La Land, right? But there were definite signs with his wife, you know, and so they were going through it, you know, and she was trying to get, she did, you know, and to absolutely no fault of her own, she did what she knew to do at the time, and she went to the Marine Corps. She went to his command with him, and again, this was years prior to that fateful day, right? So they were working towards something. It was evident to her. Now, I think my big takeaway is that I think as active duty and as veterans, you know, we need to be open and transparent to our significant others. You know, how I stumbled across you was watching Marcos's wife and her interview. It was a wife talking about how her husband took his life. And I think I caught her say that Marcos had told her, should anything happen, to reach out to you guys. You guys had, you know, comms, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what she did. And I think if the veteran community and even the active duty community leaves a little something to the missus that if something happens to me, here's a handful of guys that you can call anytime, you know. And I think that right there is huge. I think, long story short, the Marine Corps failed Nikki. I think, and unfortunately, he was going through his battles around the time of COVID. So where he was originally going in and receiving treatment, with a psychiatrist or a counselor of sorts in person. COVID hits, and then everything goes to a fucking laptop. And there's no connection. You know, you can sit there and look at a screen and say, yeah, I'm good to go. You know, okay, we'll see you next month. You know, that's how it is with the VA with me. You know, like I go and see the VA and it's, I'll see you in a month. I'll see you in a month. And I'm like, I freaking need you more than once a month or once every other month, you know? And so this is now even more distant with a laptop. Marine Corps is an institution, man, you know, and I hate to say it, it doesn't care about the individual, you know? And prior to coming here, I was able to talk with my chaplain where I work, and I guess we can get into that, like, you know, later. But the chaplain gave me, the chaplain's a great man, you know, he was an enlisted prior, and then he crossed over and became a chaplain, you know, and he told me that, you know, honor, courage, and commitment is what we're bred for, right? You know, it's what we, that's like our ethos, I guess, if you will. The honor, courage, commitment to the institution, to the Marine Corps, but we're not practicing honor, courage, and commitment to ourselves. So we need to take a good hard look that if we're hurting, the only ones that know it are us. So unless we're honest with our spouses, unless we're honest with our brothers, you know, we're going to be stuck in this fucking cycle. And so part of me talking with my chaplain, and you know, it's just we got to be honest with each other, you know, and, you know, they always say it's okay to not be okay. And that's cliche and all, you know, but it's true, man. You know, I think like this right here, you and I sitting here is therapeutic for me, right? It's, it helps to talk with another veteran, you know, and it can be a freaking random vet that I don't even know. And, you know, I've never met in my life, but I go to a bar or I'm at a function or something. And it's that instant bond. Mm-hmm. It's that instant. I feel you, brother, you know, like, I get it, you know, the hurt and the pain. And I say that pain, you know, is a lot of times it's, the pain is too much, and I get it, you know. But that bonding with another brother or sister, you know, that's probably either gone through it or is going through it, man, it fucking helps, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Going back, Bobby is how many years did you do in the Marines?
I did 4 years in the Marine Corps. Got out as a sergeant. Got out in October of 2000. And then I know a lot of your interviews, you know, you ask how was the transition? You know, I think my transition, I think my biggest issue I had was, okay, I was a sergeant in the Marines, you know. I was a bad motherfucker, right? And I go, and now I'm working at Home Depot or I'm working at Costco or whatever. And I got some pimple-faced kid telling me, hey, you gotta hurry up and clock back in. You gotta do this, you gotta do that. And I was very much of the mindset that I'll dance circles around you all day long. You know, you're not gonna tell me nothing I don't know or whatever. I had that mentality, that Marine Corps mentality, right? I think what saved me was I found the U.S. Forest Service, you know, firefighting, old school firefighting, you know. And so it's hard backbreaking work, working chainsaws, Pulaskis and shovels, you know, and there's rank structure. There was freaking PT. Every day was different. There was a mission, right? And I think had I had not found the Forest Service, I think I would have resorted right back to what I was doing prior to me getting in the Marine Corps, you know? I got in the Marine Corps to avoid the shit that I, you know, I wanted to avoid, the freaking gangs, drugs, and everything else, you know? I get out of the Marine Corps, had a bunch of leave, sold it back, and I just freaking kicked it for a few months, you know? Did nothing constructive, you know? And saw that I was going right back on the block again, you know, and didn't want that, and found the Forest Service, man, and that was it, man. I was a firefighter, you know. Was fortunate enough to fight fire all throughout the country. I think I excelled in that because it kept me focused, you know, working at Home Depot or Costco. It's thoughtless work, you know. Can do it with, you know, have my brain tied behind my back type of thing, you know. But now I'm in charge of a hand crew. Or now I'm on a hotshot crew, or now I'm on an engine, now I'm working with helicopters. It's my environment that, you know, helped me and it steered me into the right direction, you know. And second best job I ever had was Forest Service, man. You know, it was views and sunsets, you know. It was, you know, you're taking a break on top of a ridge in God's country, you know, while you're fighting fire, and your camaraderie is there. I'm there with 19 other dudes, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just that, I think, was huge in keeping me going in an upwards trajectory, if you will, you know.
Did you ever find yourself in any dangerous situations fighting fires?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of times where, you know, the hair stands up in the back of your neck and you've got this wall of fire coming, you know, or you get a spot fire. I mean, it's, you know, every fire is different, you know, and then whether you're on a hot shot crew or a type two crew or an engine, you know, I mean, it's challenging, you know? So yeah, there were times where we had to bump out, you know, like, okay, shit's getting too hot in here, you know, and our line's not going to hold if it's bump out, you know? But it was like that adrenaline, you know. I think a lot of us crave that freaking adrenaline, you know. And like I said, man, second best job I ever had, man. You know, all the guys that were in my wedding party, my groomsmen, were all firefighters, you know. They're all forestry guys, dude. Guys that run hotshot crews and all that stuff, you know. And they're still my brothers to this day, you know. Yeah. And so you get that camaraderie, you get that tight-knitness, you know, and it saved me, man. You know, so doing that, and even nowadays, there's veteran crews. They're a type two crew, you know, but they're all vets. And so that was huge for me. So I say that to the guys that either getting out soon or the guys that are already out looking for something challenging is fucking Forest Service, man. It doesn't pay that great, but you get that experience that all these fires now are eventually rolling into cities, right? Communities. So you start out with the Forest Service, you get your experience there, and then the city, municipal departments, LA, Orange County, all these are jumping on hiring us. From the Forest Service, I didn't have the required certs needed to work the OD. I didn't have my EMT or any of that stuff, you know. And so a partner and I both started applying heavily for DOD bases. We caught wind that there were a couple of DOD bases at hire with zero certs, you know. And so the base that hired me was YPG, Yuma Proving Grounds base out in Arizona. So I was commuting from SoCal to Yuma. And that was brutal, but I had good support there at YPG. I mean, my chief, my captain were both former Marines, you know, and so they took me under their wing, got me my certs. Once I got the certs, I started politicking over at Pendleton for Camp Pendleton Fire Department. A lot of guys, the forest that I worked for butts up against Camp Pendleton. So Pendleton and the Cleveland National Forest have a good working relationship. So a lot of guys before me at the Forest Service were already working at Pendleton. And so I already knew a lot of guys there. So I started politicking, you know, and I'd go and talk with some of my fire brothers and, hey man, tell me what's the hardest part about working at Pendleton? And, you know, the guys would tell me, you know, probably the suicides, you know. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe a suicide a year or two or something like that, you know. And, okay, I get it, you know, I can handle that, right? And so then I get hired with Pendleton. And now I'm in it, right? Within my first 6 months of working at Pendleton, I was already like on my 10th suicide.
You know? What?
And I'm just like blown away. Like everybody talks about the 22 veterans a day, but nobody ever talks about the active duty component of guys and gals that are freaking taking their lives, you know? And so it was hard for me. Hard for me being a former Marine, you know, and then now I'm working on the base. You know, I didn't realize how this was gonna freaking hit me. But every patient that I deal with on Pendleton is a Marine for the most part, or dependent, you know. And so I'm looking at every patient as my brother, as my sister. And I'm going to these freaking suicides, man, you know, and either attempts or successful, you know, suicides. And it's fucking me up, man. You know, I was like, I don't understand. Like, what's the Marine Corps doing for this, you know? VAs waving the flag, fighting a good fight for freaking, you know, veterans, and everybody wants to do 22 push-ups here and there, you know. But nobody's talking about the active duty guys and gals. And a lot of these guys are freaking young, haven't even deployed yet. You know, a lot of them are coming back coming back with some baggage and some issues, you know. And without getting into crazy specifics, man, you know, anywhere from we had one kid go, you know, they're at the range. And, you know, you've got your battle buddy, you know, I guess. And he's like, hey, I'm going to go to the shitter. So he goes to the shitter with his rifle. Nobody thinks twice, you know, and the shitter doors are loud when they slam shut. So they hear a pop and they think somebody just walked in or out of the shitters, you know. And then everybody's like, hey, well, where's so-and-so, you know. And so then they go and they check and took one to the head, you know. And so, you know, I don't know.
Do any of these guys, well, I'm not sure you would get a chance to read any of this. I'd imagine it'd be maybe the MPs when they're doing an investigation or something. But do any of these guys or gals leave evidence of why it is they're taking their life?
Some of them write letters, you know, and they're pretty freaking ominous, you know. Some of them, you know, the Marine that is in that position doesn't think about what he's doing to his squad, his platoon, his company, his family back home. You know, they just think of the now, right? You know, and when they do it, you know, it fucks everybody's day up, to put it lightly. You know, you've got these other young dudes that are, these other young Marines that are hurting as well now, and so now they're tossing the idea around, you know, and so like we try. There's a handful of us firefighters that are former Marines, you know, and all that. We try to talk with the kids, man, because it's what they are. It's a freaking 19, 20-year-old kids, man. And it's like, man, come to my fire station, you know. I'm there for 48 hours. I'm getting paid for it regardless. Come by. We'll sit outside. We'll smoke and we'll joke, you know, and I'll try my best to help you out wherever I can. Others are, you know, passive attempts, you know, cries for help type of thing, you know. But I think the takeaway is that, you know, the Marines that are trying this or that are talking, I mean, we just got to look out for each other, man. You know, if you've got somebody in your platoon that you know is like fucking up, you know, or just not all there, or you sense something, you got to freaking make a move on it, you know. And a lot of guys don't want to help. A lot of guys just want to fucking end it, you know. And I can't, I'm not in their shoes. I can't knock them for it, you know. But I mean, it's hard, man. And Marine Corps does keep track of the deaths, you know, and this is just Pendleton. And this is just the Marine Corps. I know there's fucking Army, Air Force, you know, there's Lejeune. This is not just a Pendleton issue, you know. So, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Are you in charge of fire for the all of Camp Pendleton, the entire base?
Yeah, we're the entire base. And with a section of the fire freeway, we respond out in Orange County, Fallbrook, Oceanside, you know, it's mutual aid stuff. But Pendleton is ours, you know. So, each camp pretty much has a fire station within, you know, a couple minutes driving distance, you know. And so, you know, we respond to some of the same barracks, some of the same housing, you know. I mean, and I think a lot of us do develop relationships with some of the patients or some of the Marines, you know, that come by the station. You know, we had one crazy call. I don't know if you heard of it. The AAV that ran over a natural gas line. Mm-hmm. And, oh, so, okay, this was a few years ago. That's a good one. An AAV Amtrak, right? Loaded down with Marines. They're going up a two-track road. And for convoy courtesies, when you come across, when you're tactical vehicles and you come across a civilian pickup truck or whatever, we pull off to the road, let them bump by. And this AAV pulled off into a culvert, and there was a natural gas line there. So the guy starts smelling natural gas, and the driver of the AAV starts to try and back his tracks out and get out. Well, it flashes over inside. And so now it's burnt, I think, 16, 18 Marines. You know, you've got, I think, a couple Marines that are just throwing dudes out the hatch, you know. And then I wasn't on that call. I was at a station, but we're sitting there monitoring radios, you know, and the pictures and everything that the guy said, you know, I mean, it was The Walking Dead. These Marines were walking to the engines just, everything dripping off them, you know, they're losing their skin. And real proud of my department, man. That one time they had four helos on the deck, which is like unheard of, you know, and we're freaking triaging and we're sending guys. We maxed out all the local hospitals, burn centers, everything, you know, didn't lose a single Marine, but these guys were freaking cooked, man. And the crazy thing is, like, a year and a half later, one of the Marines that took it the worst, he's barely getting out of the burn center, you know, and his mom and dad come down to the station, you know, and mom bakes just trays upon trays of cookies, you know, and she's bawling her eyes out, and her son looks great. You could barely tell that he was burnt bad, you know, full thickness burns all over his body, you know. He looked great, you know, and she brought cookies and was just hugging everybody, you know, and thanking everybody that, you know, we took care of his son. And I mean, it's those calls that, you know, that make it all worthwhile, man, you know, to sit there. And I got a pretty good department I work for, man, you know, a lot of good guys that genuinely care. Like, our motto is taking care of those who serve us, you know, protect us.
Yeah.
So it's a cool department to work for, man, you know, but it's just the, unfortunately, suicides go like this, and it's the holidays coming up, you know, and it always seems to freaking spike right around these times, you know, and
yeah.
So,
I'm curious, Bobby, how do these, you know, how does responding to calls like this, one call after another, man, these 10 suicides in 6 months, it kind of seems crazy to me. But calls like this, man, how does it affect you when you leave and have to go home and be a father to your kids and a husband to your wife?
It's rough, man. It was weighing on me for a while. My garage is kind of set up like your typical man cave, right? I've got a bar, you know, I've got my Marine Corps pictures and my brother's pictures that have passed in both Marines and fire. And, you know, for a while I was drinking a lot, you know, I'd go out, have a beer and a beer and a shot, you know, have a toast to one of my brothers, go back inside or do whatever I was doing, time for another beer and a shot. And so the drinking just started really, you know, became more and more and more, to the point where, you know, I needed to kind of get help. You know, I was going down that rabbit hole. And then Nikki takes his life, you know, and then that fucking floored me. And I've got four little girls, man, and my girls are my saving grace. You know, I think, you know, these calls, my fire station, they knew I was going through it, right? So my lieutenant, my captain, both told me, you know, like if the call comes through on dispatch, you know, and we know it's going to be a suicide, you know, we want you to stay back by the engine, you know. And I'm like, fuck that, you know, it's my job, you know, like I don't ever skip a beat, you know, it's the aftermath, right? Like I think with most Marines, you know, you ain't fucking up during a firefight. It's the downtime where it catches up, you know. So we've had a few suicides, you know, and they come through as such. And my lieutenant wants to, hey, man, hang back. I'm like, it's not my, you know, I appreciate it, but no. Go grab my shit and go do our job, you know. And I think I've been dealing with it a lot more, kind of talking with the chaplain and finding church and getting my girls immersed and my wife, getting us back to wholesome values and just trying to take the little poisons out of my life, you know, and just focus on my girls. And you know, that's my new mission now, you know, and I think I'm dealing with it a lot better. But we have had a number of firefighters that, you know, they either came from the Forest Service where you don't see a whole lot of medical calls and stuff. You're just doing strictly wildfires, you know, and then they come and then we're running a five freeway with gnarly traffic accidents, you know, and we're, you know, doing this and that, all just a wide spectrum of calls. And they don't like it. So a lot of them freaking go back to the forest or a lot of them go elsewhere, you know, and they're like, man, this is too much for me. You know, it's a lot, man, being a fireman, you know, I mean, and we've got our own little niche there on the base, you know, but we run a wide spectrum from helicopter crashes to AAVs, LAV rollovers, you know, to your suicides, to your DV, domestic violences, to your freaking traffic act. I mean, we run a freaking wide gamut of calls, you know, it just depends on what station and what day, you know. Mm. So it can get taxing and it was freaking wreaking havoc on me for a while. You know, Marine Corps screwed my back up, you know, and so not getting good sleep, not getting good PT, not taking care of myself, drinking, and just, you know, just not taking care of myself is kind of took me to a bad spot, man.
Yeah. You missed Marine Corps at all?
Fuck. I couldn't stray too far from it, man. You know, like I fucking miss the Marine Corps, man. I love where I work because it's my Marine Corps, you know, it's my freaking base. That's what I know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I miss it a great deal. I'm blessed to have good communications with my brothers, but yeah, I miss it, man. And I am fucking proud as ever.
What do you miss most about it?
My brothers, man.
The camaraderie?
Yeah. It's there's nothing like it, man. Fire is close, you know, but the Marine to your right and your left, man, there ain't nothing like that. You know, yeah, you go through a fire academy or a police academy or what have you, you know, but there ain't nothing like fucking being a Marine. Mm. It's right here, man, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I miss it. And you know, I miss the camaraderie. I miss the fuck games. I miss all of it, man. You know?
Well, we're going to get ready to wrap up, man. Any last words?
I just appreciate what you're doing, brother, you know, like putting together a platform, you know, to let us talk and to let us network and to let us just vent, man, is fucking invaluable in today's society, man. There's so much shit that's just negative. And I think what you're doing, dude, is on the right path, dude, to helping people, you know. And I got some other stories, man. I loved it when we get more time, you know, to sit there and you know, maybe I'll come back or something, you know. But I mean, and I've got other brothers, dude, that I think have some. I got guys that were in Anglico and whatnot that could sit there and
yeah,
wow, yeah.
You know? Well, you want to talk about those other stories or? You got plenty of time.
I got to rehearse them in my head only on account of I got my little ones, you know, and I got to make sure that we're PC and we're
good okay. to go, you know. All right. No problem.
Yeah, man.
Well,
appreciate you.
Thanks for being here, brother. It's a big contribution, man, for Urban Valor. So it's always my pleasure, man, to have it, to get any veteran in the seat, man. So
Semper Fi, brother.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
I got bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away cause I don't like here. Ghosts of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.